I kind of prepared the presentation in as a PowerPoint presentation, but it's good that there's a lot of people, so I suppose it's not good to do it over in there, so we'll just have to make do with me looking over at my notes. Maybe we can start by introducing each other.
And the people can say maybe a little bit of what they hope to get from the workshop, because the different areas of focus are community organizing, student organizing, and labor organizing. So if you have something in particular that you're looking for, just to really get a sense from people what it is that they're hoping to learn tonight.
Yeah.
And my name is Heidi Metten, and I'm the youth program coordinator.
I'm Sarah Hellenic. I'm a student at McGill, and I work with student workers solidarity at McGill. And so I guess I'm interested sort of in all three parts. They all sort of have to do with work that I'm interested in. I'm a little person that actually a student from New York City of Visiting Center, but I'm interested in this too, and how to connect different kinds of programs.
My name is Christine. I'm a student at the Students from McGill, and I think I'm in the group of students that are really the most organized. My name is Dakota, and that's not the same thing that Christine. I go to the same college that her, but I'm interested in all three parts as well.
My name is Sutton, and I'm interested in all three as well.
And I'm starting my stage at the Regional Center. And basically, I just put together introductions and issues.
Hi, everybody. I'm Michael. I'm a student from COCO, the Center for Community Organizations. That's my paper. I'm interested, actually, I'm not sure about the three parts, but I'm interested in how to break kind of the paralysis that people feel around being overburdened in their work, family, and commitments, as well as just the paralysis of the information overload, and how to get beyond that. So I guess in essence, how to involve the non-converted.
Organizing and news about labor from civil
Well, it's I guess it. I hope I could cover all the expectations that that's being floated around. And it would be nice also later on at the end of the presentation to get a little bit of a feedback and see if your questions were answered a little bit either, or there were confusion, things like that, or how I made your life more confusing. Well, I'm Tess. And at the present time, my work is coordinator of the Immigrant Worker Center. Before that, though, I had been organizing for the union, for UNITE, Union for the Garment and Textile Workers, for about 4 years. And so my background in organizing is organizing workers to become union members, but at the same time, being an immigrant, us from the Filipino communities had been organizing within the Filipino community, as well as trying to work in solidarity with many other groups, in order to make all our conditions better. So that's me in a nutshell. I've been here for about 14 years. So most of my organizing really happened here in Montreal. So as for the this, so I was gonna just want to ask everybody of your sense of what is an organization. What do you when you hear of organization? Like say, some people belong to organizations. What comes to your mind? Common purpose could be to form a team, to play a sport. It's an organization. So it's any group that aspires for a common goal is an organization. But the other question is, do we need to be part of an organization? And why do we want to be part of an organization? For us here.
Because people who are grouped together with a common
than on their own.
So, like in India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, just as a follow-up, just as individuals, people are social beings. So people in nature wants to interact. People wants to be with someone. And as part of society, that's a natural occurrence. But the most important thing too is that people have problems, and problems are not personal. Although, of course, in this society, everyone is said, well, if something is wrong, it's an individual's problem, it's your problem. Like, give us examples of problems. Like, say, as a student.
Students fail their grade.
Did not study enough. But do they ask why? What were the reasons why? Why did the student fail to do their studies? Could it be that they are working because they don't have money to support themselves? Money. It's always a problem for everybody. So even for people who work, there's people who work on minimum wage. Is minimum wage enough to support the family? So when we think of a problem is always associated with something else. It's never personal, because it's something that goes within in society. Health. Why are people not so healthy? A lot of times now here there's all these questions of environmental questions relating to environment. People who work two or three jobs, students who has to run from here to there, unable to eat on time, all affects health. So nothing in society that says I have a problem is a personal problem. So it always goes back to these problems is why people band together to organize so that they can come to a common purpose and fix these problems. So that's the... And the big question is, how do we do this? How do we organize? So... Please feel free to ask questions. If there at any point you have some question, please feel free to organize. To organize. I have a single track mind. And as Heidi was saying, this can be applied in any organizing. It can be applied in school, at work, anywhere in general. It's a method that was developed in organizing the migrant workers in Asia Pacific. And it's just from getting through experiences in organizing from the Filipina movement, as well as from the classical works of Lenin and Marx and Mao, and as well as from the book of written by this guy Dan Labuche. So it's kind of a mix of everything. But there are 5 steps. Initial social investigation. I'll describe it and then we can discuss. I'm also not very good in spelling, so if you can understand it, that would be funny. Building. Five steps we follow. Initial social investigation. Do you have any inkling of what it is? In short, it's called SI. We're kind of fun with using acronyms. SI, and we even think social investigation, and then we also add with class analysis. So in our organizing, we always have this. We go by this formula, social investigation plus class analysis. Social investigation is just gathering information. Like say you are organizing in McGill or SWS. So, you are based in the universities. How do you do your social investigation? It's gathering information. It's gathering data. It's looking for who are the people in this campus. Where do you? What are their name? What do they want? What are their day-to-day activities? Who are their friends? Everything that you need to know is called social investigation. And class analysis is about of these people, the people that you are investigating, that you wanted to be part of an organization that you are going to build, like say for example in the union, in the workplace, who are the people in the workplace, what do they do, which machine are they working on, what's the quota, things like that. In the university, I suppose where do they live in campus? Are they in campus? What are the courses they are taking? What are their interests? Are they fairly conservative, or are they who are their friends? What issues do they want to discuss? When you talk about the war, what do they think about it? Their family, what sort of ties do their family belong to? Are their parents a member of the military? Are they connected in the government? Are they on welfare? Everything is social investigation. And so this is very important. In this part, what you do is, so I'll just keep that there, so we could always come back. So social investigation is done through integration and research. Integration is being with them, being with the people that you wanted to organize. Like if you're organizing in I could only come back to the university all the time because there's no workplaces. I'm very much used to community and union organizing. So help me out with the university scenario, because I'm not very familiar with it. Through integration, through living, being with the people that you wanted to organize, you develop trust between each other. That's where you learn the day-to-day problem. And with this, with being together all the time, or not all the time, but to be integrated with them, then you're learning what their problems are, and you're being a part of making the solution to that problem. You also learn how to what their likes are. It's the only way. Social investigations are needed in organizing, because how else would you be able to know what you would like to do in an organization? So organizations are built from the bottom up. An organization, it's hard to maintain if an organization is right away done with a structure, president, vice president, and then you are telling the people, okay, this is your problem, this is what we want to do. So the initial part of building is knowing what the needs are. But of course, when you're integrating people and they tell you, oh, this is what's happening, this is the problem in school, like say for example, tuition fee increase. not many students cannot afford tuition fee increase because such and such. So, how are you able to prove that this is really a problem? So, then research helps you do that. It's to make sure that what people tells you is really true. So you do a research, and you can do it by interviewing other people, by go the usual. But mostly in research, it means more contacts, more contacts with people, so that you begin to piece together what really is the scenario in this building, in this community, in this university. SI is also a continuous thing. It doesn't stop when you have met a few people and you have made your research that yes, the problem in this building is not enough heating. So, or any issue for that matter. So it doesn't stop when you have when you think that yeah, I have five people who tells me that yes, this building is something wrong in this building. So it continues because there's also this thing about change. There's always change. So one day someone can say that, oh, I don't want to come to your meeting because, but who knows? Maybe some other things will happen and following day they come. So it's an ongoing thing. Some important points also to remember is that in this integration, you come in contact with people, and people come from different places with different ideas. So you have to take that into consideration. Like, is what he telling me? Is that because of their experience from where they come from? Is that a direct answer, or is there some cultural background that I need to find out? So these are some considerations to do. Well, as I was telling earlier, this SI, social investigation, is always done in relation to economy, politics, and culture. So that also goes to say with the differences in people. And it's also in relation to class, because from what economic background are these people coming from? Why are they always late? So then the simple question of why are they always late is because they are always late because they have to do more work because their family cannot afford to send them to school. So are they late because they just simply don't want to go to school? So there's a difference in there. Are they hanging out with their friends to want to do some other things? So and What are we? We always also in our. I can only speak from the point of view of organizing within the Philippine community. We apply this method. We always say, no investigation, no right to speak. So that when we present ideas, or it would have been that it was already well investigated before, or well in this kind of way. What are we looking for in doing this? Because when we do this, we want to see in this, say, in the university, what's the political spectrum? What do most of the students want? Do they simply want to just go to do their studies, or do they want to engage in more political activities, or do they want to just continue the status quo? So it also tells you, when you do this, the balance of forces. How many people can be organized to your cause, or how many people would not want to join you? So you have sort of an idea right away of doing this, that would there be a possibility of doing a group? And so in order to do those two, you need to classify people. And I'm sorry if I sound like very cold and calculating, but this is to avoid too much illusion. Like there was something earlier from Michael about how do we do too much of an information overload and too much things later. So classifying people, we do it by saying they belong to, they are advanced. Middle forces or backward. It's funny. What it means only is that the advanced forces, the advanced people, are people who are open to your ideas, who would be willing to come and join you. The middle forces are people that might understand and will be willing to try new ideas. And the backward are those who are reactionary, and those that you don't want to, you isolate, you. It would be hard for you to concentrate on convincing. 2 years later, you're still convincing. So then, when you classify them according to this, then you concentrate your organizing on people on this, and then you just don't lose your so much time trying to get these people here.
Also, too, depending on what you're doing, the background people might be people who work against you too, right? Who like trying to sabotage your organizing.
What you're doing, yeah. So, yeah. there are any question on this part? The SI, social investigation part. So this is the thing to remember. Advanced, middle, backward. And depending on, of course, what kind of group do you want it to be. So when you're doing this, then of course you talk to them, and through your talk you can figure out, are they open to the idea? It could be, I don't know, organizing to have a professor out of campus for some reason. So some students might think that very bad. So then backward, they're not gonna join you. So then we go to the contact building. Contact building is a natural progression of your social investigation. It just simply means identifying the people that you meet in when you're doing your integration. You have to always be conscious of names all the time. Names, addresses, telephone numbers, class background, their family ties. So a notebook is very helpful. It's because you're gonna be meeting people, and then of course what every time you have to be conscious of this, and then what are they, then you begin to ask yourself, are they advanced? Are they middle? Are they backward? So it's a constant thing also that happens. So at this point, your advanced people should already be working for you, if you are the organizer. That the only thing that happens in contact building is that just getting contacts. The advance at this point, should their task is to give you more names. Names and names and names, then you slowly begin to build up at this point. it's also important that when you're doing this initial contact building, it should be concentrated either on, like, if it's a building, then it's you start in the building. If you're organizing, because you want to saturate the place before you go somewhere else, then you should be able to have contacts in this, like, say, or if it's a building, it could be a floor. Could be on this floor, or could be in this class. So that's the only thing for contact building. So once you got at least 5 contacts who are advanced, then you begin to form your organizing group, because 5 or so people can begin to to work together. So an organizing group may be composed of 3 to 5 people. And its organizing groups can be likened to having a core. It's core building. And so, So what do they do? What is... Sometimes this organizing group, though, with the nature of your organizing, can be a clandestine group. Has to be working underground, with an underground nature, depending on, university organizing, I suppose, doesn't need that kind of component. But in some countries or some issues where state repression is high, then it's an instant where you need to do a clandestine organizing group to build your organization. So your organizing group, this 4 to 5 people, it's good to have odd numbers because then there would be a descending, if there's a descending voice, then there's someone to break that. If you have to have a decision making, it's good to have a tiebreaker, so they say. So the important thing with this is that they begin to form a basis of unity. What do they want? How do they want it? Who are the people, the names that they proposed over here? Do they all agree that these are advanced? So then it begins to shape up. If they don't agree, then they begin to discuss why, and then it's also a beginning process of commitment building. So they, at this point also, you begin to form your structure. Who could be a team leader to... The main role is it's task based, because you're doing your work, you're forming a group, so you're not thinking about ideological discussions or heavy things. You are talking about which person to follow up, who do we ask next, things like that. It's really to build. But while still in this state, though, you also begin your educational process. So if it's like, say, usually when we were doing the union organizing, at this stage, that's where we begin to discuss about the basic principles of a union. Why do we need a union? Why do we, what's the law? What's the labor code? How does the labor code apply? What are the characteristics of unions in Canada? What is a militant unionism? So you begin to discuss about things, to kind of begin to level up your understanding of towards what you wanted to do when finally you have your organization. It's a starting of leveling point. So that's organizing group. Of course, you don't stop doing this. So now, whereas before you were only one, now you were five. So then you start to build other OGs. So it could be first floor, second floor, third floor. Or in the union organizing, it could be the receiving and shipping, the assembly line. In the production, there are several assembly lines, so it could be compared to that. Or at university, it could be one OG in, say, science, one OG for the legal department, one OG for social work. So once you have like three or more OGs, which is composed of three to five people, then you begin to get your organizing committee. So this is what we term OGOC in organizing. OG is organizing group and OC is the organizing committee. And its organizing committee sends someone to the organizing group sends someone to the organizing committee. So then you're beginning to form your structure at this point. And an organizing committee is the only function different from this is that it's the coordinating committee. So if, say, you wanted to have a meeting, one that it's OG, well, want to have a meeting maybe at this point still separately, so then it's the job of the OC to see that things go smoothly, that the meeting happens, that there's to help out with the planning what happens in the meeting, and ensure that there would be coordinate. So it's also about the coordinate about are all the OGs getting the same education, the same leveling up. It's not that okay, the like say in union organizing, like this OG has already done basic principles of the union, the labor code, and this one hasn't even done anything. Then what happens is, when you all come together, some people are not understanding what's happening. So you wanna be able to, at some point, be able to know that it's one of the people here are knows what's happening to the organization. And so finally you wanted to formalize your organization and the General Assembly. So the last part is General Assembly. And in union organizing, it's when the union drives up and when we all go out to sign cards and convince others that, yes, would you like to come and join? So that's also when, at the General Assembly, when you formalize your structure, where you have your, you elect your, whatever you want to call it, chairperson, president, or whatever. And it's the General Assembly that decides. It's the highest deciding body. So all of these ones are only based on task, but the decision making is here when everybody comes together. And you basically at this point, it's where you have your organization. So the OG and OC collapse. It dissolves, I should say. Because after the General Assembly, then you have your formal structure. But
Not education, but what are the methods? What are the values? For example, will we use violent means or not? Would that be in the OC, your organizing committee?
You mean tactics?
Okay, sure, whatever.
Well, it really depends on what kind of organization you want to build. So that let's say over here in the, you're already proposing when you are doing this OGOC, this organizing group, you're already proposing that, say, you wanted to what? Do what? Or form a group of say what? Like say the student worker solidarity. You're proposing to do that. So already you wanted to discuss why do we want to do that? What would be the purpose of that? You start building, discussing already. If it's a group that you propose would be something that would do direct action, because that's what's already in your mind before asking people, then you begin to ask over here. Are people who wanted to join you, do they agree on direct action? So then starting from here, you are not confused that this is people who want to do direct action. But it's a group that you wanted to build because you wanted to like say the environmental group, then the basic concept really starts already from here to develop. But how you really begin to have your own statement when you do your own purpose of this group is working out in stages. Where people, because the people that will come to your general assembly are people that are coming from here. And so starting from here to up to here, you are already developing your reason for being. So any other question?
Yeah. I think I just missed the step where you said that once the General Assembly is formed, everything else dissolves.
Well, because the purpose is to form an organization. So once you reach General Assembly, then you don't need OGOC anymore. That's why it dissolves. Because your OGOC is supposed to bring you people, supposed to bring you to an organization. So it's like dying a natural death, because the purpose is no longer there. Because the purpose of your OG and your OC is to bring people, but at the same time, while you're doing that, to start consolidating them as much as you can.
I think maybe after your OG and your OC will be from the probably the philosophy is different than that, because otherwise the only way I see is moving to members or people at the center of the time. It's not a good philosophy or a good practice to have.
Yeah.
Could be the place where it could change or turn the purpose. Like worst case scenario, it could happen.
Yeah, it could happen.
If you have a purpose of organizing for a certain thing, and then you have a big bunch of people, but if you give them the power or the right to decide and elect people and vote for things, mm-hmm. then maybe they're going to go a different direction than the first purpose.
Yeah, that could happen, but just from my example, because I was doing union organizing a lot. So let's just say, for example, I'm organizing a factory. So an OG could be, say, the shipping department, assembly line number one, assembly line number two, and so in this, what I would want to do is that I should have, from contact building, I should be able to have at least 3 people from shipping. If, say, the size of the company is 100 people. So I should have at least 100 people over here. 3 people. 3 or 5 people. In each of this. And with these 3 people, with one of them should be able to come to the organizing committee. So, and then why you want to have one is in union organizing, this is where the concept of clandestine happens. It could be an example of a clandestine building of an organization because of the repressive nature of the workplace trying to organize. So you don't want to have so many, because when there's too many, then it could easily just come out and nothing happens of it. So while you are doing this, you're doing this would be already talking to other coworkers and giving them a few hints. Someone will come to your house sometime later, or what do you think is your are you satisfied with the working condition? Is your pay good? Did you file for CSST? Things like that. Your members of this. At the same time, those who are here will already start thinking about when would be a good time to finally hit people, hit the houses. Together, presumably, the main organizer would be coming from the union, or someone inside too. So they would be part of the OC. So the General Assembly is when everyone signs up a card, and then those who then becomes union member will decide who will be union president, so on and so on. So you don't need this. That it dissolves. But of course, in union organizing, there's already the purpose is to have a union, to be a union member. Where the difficulty lies is in doing your negotiating your contract, because there's one thing to talk about what kind of contract do you want, what kind of raise do you want, as opposed to later on what can you get. You probably have experienced in the union about this. Yeah. So then that's when the members start, you know, fighting with each other, because one wants to agree, one wants to go to strike, not me, some others don't want to go to strike. Whereas you are talking about it already here, that in your basic principle, like in your, when doing your education, when you're studying about principles of union organizing, you were already discussing about strike. But when it comes time to finally do it, it's a different story, because then it also involves, you know, circumstances, concrete conditions at the time that it happens. So, is it a little bit clearer or more manageable? So you want to have a little break? Maybe you could think of questions after. More questions? I'll leave this over here. I suppose we can erase this now, because this was dissolved. So it will dissolve in our memory. Basic thing to remember in organizing, there are only three things. Education and propaganda. mass campaigns and alliance building. The General Assembly and an organization, presumably. I hope that that after the General Assembly there's already a structure. So then we have that. But even if we have that structure, that organization like Student Worker Solidarity or FIRE or what or whatever, we don't stop building. The building continues, the SI continues, the contact building continues. The only difference is that now there is an organization that people can come into. So now, how do you continuously build and at the same time expand your organization? Expand, there's two things to remember: expansion and consolidation. Expanding while getting the commitment of your member. Commitment, consolidation means commitment. How do you make them stay? And so there's this tree that to remember. So it's basically, well, education, there's two types of education. There's the formal and the informal. The formal education is courses that you organize formally. Like if it's a if it's a women's organization, then presumably you would have courses organized on feminism, what debates in feminism or whatever. But there has to be a set of organized educational program that you can offer to your members and to the people who would come to your group. Or one thing you can start with is orientation. Orientation of your group. What is your group? That should be a basic of your a basic course that you can offer. Then there's the informal. Informals are teach-ins, like teach-ins you organize in school when you invite speakers to come in and you invite people to come in and be there. There's also study circles when, you know, you could just form groups and discuss about a subject that you might want to discuss. Like say, for example, class analysis. Class analysis of this group of your members. It could be some. Although in other settings, like if it's a related to labor that you are organizing, then presumably you would want to do class analysis. What is class analysis? What is class? Then it could either be one of your formal educational topic, or if it's one of those where you want to do a preliminary discussion to interest people, then you can do it as a study circle type of thing. So why do we want to do education? It's, we want to do it so that you develop the members' capacity to continue the struggle. Because unless they understand what they are fighting for, then they slowly, one by one, lose interest. So it also enables them to strengthen their commitment. The primary objective of education is to AOM, arouse, organize, mobilize. Arouse is educating your members on the issue of, say, poverty. While educating them what happened is poverty, is it happens to people who are lazy? Why does it happen? How do people get in there and not be able to get out of poverty? So what can be done about it? Is that once they are educated, once they know that, oh yeah, we cannot be able to get out of poverty unless we have good jobs, or what happens to the welfare system, say? Why is the welfare system offering some kind of a program to workers to get workers to get people in the welfare system, ask them to work like other workers, and yet pay them not even with minimum wage, and at the same time with no dignity, because it's like getting some kind of dole out, except that they are already working, but one, they cannot be organized, they cannot belong to a union because they are just getting money from the welfare system. So that's arousing them, making them understand that something can still be done. If they organize, form a group to work against their situation, change their situation, and mobilize other groups to join them so that it would be out in the public. So it's something that you will always hear from me later, probably, if you see me a lot. AOM. Well, AOM McGill to organize for what? To have a good, I don't know, to have free education for whoever. So, and propaganda, there's a lot to be said on it. And if it's another ED, so if there's interest in doing a another workshop, another discussion on propaganda, we could organize to do that at some point. But the how to do it, but what in short. Propaganda is often done at short period of time. It's done, well, you probably know this already, in leaflets, newsletter, poems, theater. It's done depending on the condition, on the issue of the day, what's next like say you do a skit on, like they, Sok did a skit on Mila, Mila Sarkar.
Amelia.
Amelia.
That's the
woman
here.
Yeah. So Sok did a play on Mila Sarkar. It's a really good way to get the issue out there. And it's done so that you could reach a wide, broad masses, broad number of people, and it should reflect the people's daily struggle. So it could be depending on, like, say your what your organization is doing. Then it depends really on what your focus is. And once again, the objective of propaganda is to AON. You want to have people there. So mass campaigns. We come to the next one. Mass campaign is done to reach out to the broad participation of members. So like when we were one of the mass campaign we did was the Melka Salvador campaign to stop the deportation of Melka Salvador and her son, and it was a good campaign. We managed to win it, and it was done through a broad outreach. Some people here were involved in that campaign. So it's this mass campaign is an expression of a collective mass action with an objective. So like the Melka campaign, the objective was to stop the deportation of Melka and her son. The other campaign we did last year was the reform of the Labor Standard Act. So we had a few demands that we wanted to be in the bill, in the Norm de Travail. The bill just passed. Some of our demands were there, but of course there's still a lot of work to be done. Mass campaign should be well planned and based on the level of awareness, strength, and readiness of the members and possible reaction to this mobilization. So when you're doing your educational and propaganda, it's already in preparation for your members to be involved in the mass campaign. And mass campaigns are a way for your members to be engaged in a political battle. Because it's a collective work, it makes your members there to be able to develop themselves as activists. Because that's the only time that they are able to be out there. So it's an opportunity for them to test themselves also. Will they be, once they get into a rally, a demonstration, anything public, then they are able to assess for themselves, is this a good thing for me? Well, I want to do it again. Especially like with them in times when, like say, the Quebec City FTAA with the tear gas and everything. So they see the repression against public dissent. It's in their face. So they are able for themselves to analyze, is this something that I wanted to continue doing? Because sometimes people engage in theoretical discussion with themselves. So they are able to convince themselves that, yes, this is what this is right, this is, I must be organized, I must go and join the rally. But once they are there, it's also a test whether the thinking that's going on in their head is really what they wanted to do. Because a mass campaign is confrontational. It really gets you, especially mass campaigns that are done with actions that are done so that you are asking to change government policies, actions that are done to to eventually say change a system, like say from capitalism to something else. Those are actions that are not generally well taken, so then a lot of repression is involved. So it gives your members an opportunity to have that experience. And once that's done, they are able to see for themselves also in relation to their class standing, they see themselves in relation to their economic, political, and cultural relation with society. It basically puts them in a confrontational situation, even with themselves. So it's a test of the internal, how can I put it? Of their commitment, basically. So this is a must, though, that very often I find here in North America that is missing. Well, maybe I'm not, my organizing is still also very limited, but this is one thing that I just want to point to you, that every time a mass campaign is done, then there has to be an assessment and evaluation of the campaign. So that you identify the lessons learned from that campaign and the experiences out of it. You identify is the organization is strengthened or weakened. Say for example, in the Melka Salvador campaign, it was originally a campaign by PINAI, the women's organization, the Filipino women's organization, which Melka is a member of. So because of the intensity of that campaign, PINAI was in a way weakened in the membership, because everyone was focused on the campaign, on the Melka Salvador campaign. So the members who are mostly domestic workers were unable to engage in it fully, because it's have not been able to go out to the rallies, because they work, most of them work also in the weekend, so the membership declined. On the other hand, with the Melka Salvador campaign, other organizations flourished. Like in our organization, it's the Solidarity Network that flourished, so that we were able to know people who were involved in it, like Sarah and then Helen, Heidi, we found through the Melka Salvador campaign. So then you So also, with the assessment, you also have to see the effect on the leaders as well as the members. And whatever the assessment is, then it has to be reported to the public, to the members especially. Like, especially the members. So out of that assessment, then you're able to adjust for the next time that you do it. And others will learn out of your experience too. And but in doing this assessment, you must be really sincere and honest and humble to accept the weaknesses that happened in the organizing. It's always fun when there's victory. But even in victory, there are lessons to be learned. So Melka Salvador's campaign was successful, but even if it was, there was really plenty of lessons that we have to learn out of it. One thing good also that came out of it is that the defense that was used on Melka was the defense that is now being used to defend the Algerian families. So, for us in the Filipino community and organizing that, it's also to see how your campaign would impact on future policy making and things like that. So it's just something to remember, so that also when you're assessing, then you could also see that in your budget. So, which brings us to the last one. If you have questions, maybe you could hold it a bit. We have fun things to discuss. Alliance building. So, alliance building is an expression of your unity, of the unity of your group with other groups. So you form alliances on the basis of issues and with organizations that presumably have the same aspirations as you have. We work a lot with the South Asian Women's Community Center here, with other community groups, with the labor unions, on an alliance basis, because of the thinking that it would be it would benefit some good in the future. The alliance building is temporary, is temporarily formed, and it's on an issue-based campaign. Long-term alliance, though, is built to pursue the continuity of assistance and cooperation. Like, say, in our case, we have alliances, like, say, with groups like No One Is Illegal, to support the issue of the immigrant workers, refugees, and in particular about now with the issue of terrorism. So based on our analysis that many of what's happening now in the with the immigrants and refugees is basically I have a mental block. But in any way, you form alliances with groups that you have the same, basically, have the same ideas with you. And the long-term goal is to cooperate and to, in the future, hopefully see a conditions change on what you are fighting for. You have the same fight, so you form alliances with them. But in alliance building, you have to be conscious of the independence of its organization. Like, say, we work a lot with SOC, but the Immigrant Worker Center is doing its own thing, and they are doing their own thing. So we have different. We pursue different activities. But also we have alliances with women's groups and some of them would have, like, say, an analysis of the feminist movement that we have a different take on, but we are there on alliance to pose issues like the issue of the domestic workers or Mila Sarkar's case. I'm always Mila's case. So women's violence or things like that. So it could be, we always think that those things can be debated. So the secret is to be open to debate. You can only move forward when you debate. So we don't shy away from discussions and debates, but with a view that there has to be independence between organizations when you do alliance work. What that means, retaining your independence, is that decision making is done by consensus. The majority cannot dictate to the minority. The minority cannot veto the majority. Mutual help and protection, mutual benefit and cooperation. So this is the thing to remember in the alliance building. And that's it.
The force, what that we get from there. because well, we have a quite nice and independent writing. There's a philosophy in keeping an every local, which is a bunch of things that workers group, like people from, if you unionize, IGA or Metro, or they will form of what you call a local, and they have an independent structure. They just they can do basically on the same principle base what they want, and of course the members have to be on the boards of the students, so the members decide and we start deploying the structure, and so we have the airline division. The other divisions are like conferences, so and then the structure of the executives are all elected people from each province, and our leader is a woman, Julie Darcy, and our union is the proportion of women who represent would be about 60% of our membership are women from different communities, and men from different orientation. We recognize that. We recognize the same-sex couples. We recognize the different ethnic background. I'm sorry, language. It's based on mutual respect, basically. And we are fighting because of the law for against privatization of public.